一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。ひらひら
It's terrible. This is awful.
It's July 10th and the Gertalk is back, the speaker podcast crew. Some of us are back for the Gertalk. We've just finished episode 15 of Macross Delta. We're back to our old habits here. We're not waiting for any subs. We're not even rewatching the episode. We're getting straight into it. And getting into it with me from the US, I have...
Hey, this is Mike Aguirre, a.k.a. at Mike in Redlands, as usual. Hello, and thanks again for having me on the cast. And to my left, I have...
Egan, courtesy of Slingbox.
The mysterious Venus Strikes.
Where, he appears in the U.S.
Where will he appear next? It's that long flowing locks of hair and, yeah. Also,
what did we say last week? It depends on the plot?
That's right.
When the plot requires it.
All right. The plot might require you to be in the U.S. again next week then, Venus, but we'll talk to you then. Also, on this side with me this week, we have a newcomer to the cast in the form of Carice.
Hi, guys.
So, Carice, where might people have heard from you in the Macross fandom? I know you do a particular blog that I've read.
So I've been looking at the Macross Delta radio show for maybe the last 6 or 7 weeks or so. I do that on a blog called White Box Gems. That's a Tumblr blog.
And it's a topic I hope to get into in more detail in a future cast. But for anyone not reading it, check it out, because I think it's the only English language coverage of those radio shows.
Quite possibly. I don't know. I haven't actually looked around.
Although, with the contents of them, some of it might not need to be kept for posterity, but that's a topic for another time. But anyways, we are back to doing this in as real time as possible. So back to our old habits. Interestingly enough, at a time that is very new for Macross Delta, because we have a new opening as of this week. Renato, do you want to hit me with this new opening? Sing it.
Sing it? First of all, it had no melody. I really have to get used to it at first.
I'm right there with you, man. I did not like it.
It's going to take a while. I'll get used to it, probably.
It sounded really chill and mellow and kind of loungy, you know.
It didn't sound loungy to me.
I know, it just sounds very chillax, you know. It
sounded lousy to me.
Oh.
Wow.
Meerkat's purring. Okay, so you want to know the title, right?
Mm-hmm.
The title is another one of those wonderful Delta nonsensical titles. It's Zetairedo Theta Novatic, which means absolute zero, theta, and then novatic, which is moronic.
Okay. So that's your subtitle for it, right? We're going to see that on the single, on the cover. Speaking of covers and CDs, by the way, did you hear about the... who was it that was mentioning the lyrics in the Valkyra album? Was that you, Renato?
That was me. Well, I saw it on Twitter, so, you know, some of the internet people that use Twitter tweeted it, and I retweeted it.
Okay.
Oh, no, I didn't retweet it. I just took the... I just went to the source, and then I put that on Facebook or something.
And what was the issue?
The issue is that they screwed up all the lyrics in the songs. And so everyone who got their booklets had the wrong lyrics in the booklets, and now you have to download the PDF from the homepage to get the correct lyrics.
Wow, I'm going to go look at my CD. I didn't even check the lyrics. Wow.
Wah, wah,
you have to download something? You've already piqued my interest.
Go away, Mike. Wow, that's interesting. Also, as listeners obviously aware, then, Renato, you know, the Valkyra album is out as of last week.
Yeah.
And as far as music releases are concerned, this is the leakiest Macross, because music has been leaking left, right, and center. The OST leaked about a week before release, and the Valkyra album apparently also leaked almost a week before release. I don't remember anything like this happening with Frontier.
No, I don't either.
Well, then again, I mean, when Frontier was out, it was what, 2007, right?
2008. Yeah.
2008, and as you know, like Japan is slow to catch up with technology. So torrents were barely starting to become like a thing.
Boy, imagine saying that in the 80s. As you know, Japan is slow to catch up with technology.
Isn't that weird, right? But like, as far as like streaming and you know stuff like that, I mean, Japan's been. I mean, what you guys just got Hulu Plus and Netflix. Not about what, like a year ago or something, right?
Well, Mike, I have a fax machine in my office, so we're very high-tech.
Oh, right, exactly.
Got a fax machine in the house.
Well, you're the root of the problem then, Renato. Get rid of that thing. I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So the albums are both out, and look, we won't discuss impressions here because we'll be here all night, so let's do that on a different cast. Also, before we get started...
I should say that, you know, I am exaggerating a little bit. It's not all the lyrics to all the songs that have been screwed up. It's just a few, but it's enough. It's more than three songs, I think. I can't check right now. Hmm. But it's enough for them to have prepared this special PDF that you have to go download. So it's an issue nonetheless.
It's given like what everything. Given what a huge release this was and how much build up there was, it's a pretty major mess up.
Yeah, and considering they had time since you know it was leaked and all the fans could have mentioned that they could have fixed it before the release. I don't know,
but yeah. So the albums are out. Also in last week's issue of New Type. In the rankings, a lot has changed. Macross Delta's been knocked off the number one spot by Mike's favorite Italian restaurant.
Oh, Carbonelli.
Yes, Carbonelli's. That's a spicy zombie.
Zombini.
Also, in the character charts, we were down to, from memory, only two Valkyria members, I think, in the female. But, you know... These figures are, you know, a few weeks out of date, and I think, as you mentioned, Renato, Carbonelli's just finished, so...
Yes, which means that, you know, those Delta guys are going to come back. I mean, the reason Carbonelli is at the top right now is because, you know, there must have been some kind of climactic ending and everyone loved it. Although, I guess by the time the magazine came out... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
By the way, I didn't watch the end yet, so it was spoiled, actually.
Oh, Carbonelli, you still haven't watched the last episode?
No, because I didn't watch the second to last episode either. Rather, I watched the first 4 minutes, and then for some reason my recorder had broken or something, so that's all I had.
Wow.
So I was wondering why the file size was so small. So I recorded the last episode in full, but I'm not going to watch that until I watch the second to last episode, which means I have to wait until the end of the year when that Blu-ray comes out.
But you did buy the first Blu-ray. Are you happy with that? It looks pretty gorgeous from what I've seen.
It's amazing, and as I said, whenever the last time I was on this podcast was...
Last week?
The CD... No, I wasn't on last week.
Oh, close enough.
I was on the US. No, so it comes with a CD, which is amazing. It sounds like Franz Ferdinand for some reason.
Really?
If you like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it looks like there's a Blu-ray release coming in the US now. I think it was Crunchyroll starting to release Blu-rays now. Is that what I heard, Egan?
Yes, that's right. They announced that at Anime Expo, mm-hmm. which is unusual because it was Carbonelli was released through Amazon over in Japan.
Yes, so,
right.
You got two streaming services joining forces to bring it out on Blu-ray in America.
Right. Well, let's jump into this episode. It was pretty dialogue intensive. I think it's not a stretch to say we open up with Heinz's coronation. Well, the lead up to Heinz's coronation, because everyone, the Aerial Knights have returned to Windermere, as we saw them taking off in the Stinger last episode. And we hear the Knights talking amongst themselves, and a few kind of interesting tidbits of information are dropped regarding what's been happening to date. You know, we find out about Bogue, for example. He drops by his family's house, and... It turns out that his sisters and his entire family are dead. His sisters, who are all mentioned in his profile on the official website, because he was raised by his sisters, know, because he gets to this his grave and he's like, you know, mother, father. I'm like, all right, that's why he was raised by his and my sisters. It's like, oh, they're all dead. No wonder he's so he's angry enough to go into repeated frames of animation every episode. You know,
I'd be angry.
Yeah. So they're all dead. There's some talk of how this all happened because the Aeronauts were unable to defend the skies 7 years ago. As a result, they were forced to resort to things like the VAR, so their white wings turned to black, literally, and well, figuratively and literally. However, since then, everything has been according to Royd's Keikaku. That is the important thing. It turns out that Theo is engaged, which I was like, okay.
Which one is Theo?
One of the twins.
Oh, okay.
And Herman has apparently 2 grandkids. So we're getting all these tidbits about actual lives to these villains, which I'd like to see more of. Given that we're up to episode 15, I'm not sure we'll see too much of it.
Do we know how old Herman is?
It was like, was it 33?
He was 33, I think, on the website. How
does he have 2 grandkids?
Because 33 is really old, and if you... Renato, the answer to that question will be at Summer Comic Con, I'm sure.
Is it like... Because I was watching August earlier today.
When are you not watching August?
When I'm asleep. If I'm unconscious, I'm not watching August, you can be sure of that. All other times. And like, they have to breed by the time they're 17, right? In August.
How convenient.
Yeah. And then we know from Freya that you can be married.
Thanks for changing.
You're considered middle-aged if you're not married by 14.
So there's your answer.
Twins are like 15, right? Or 16?
Something like that, yeah. I'd have to check the website. But, yeah, so one of them, you know, is engaged. And then, Keith is back already. Royd picks Keith up in his funky-ass car, and Keith is back. However, he's missing something.
A personality.
That was missing from the beginning, right? Come on. No, he's gone full Captain Harlock. He's missing an eye.
And who was it? It was either Craig or Egan who called that. He said when it... one of you said that when Keith comes back, he'll have some scar or some kind of deformity or something.
I was thinking Paul DeLandre, like Escaflowne. I was seeing that, you know,
I don't remember
a similar thing happened. It's such a classic anime trope. The main guy, a main character takes out one of the enemies in battle, which, you know, he'll come back, but he's going to harbor a grudge and he's got some scar to show it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I find that very amusing. Like the fact that we've been saying this show was so unpredictable, like from the start, and then, you know, Egan, the mysterious, masterful Venus, manages to predict the whole show.
I just been watching way too much anime. That's all.
No, Egan, say it isn't so. I didn't know this about you. All right, and after this, we see a flashback that actually I want to pick everyone's brains on, because I wasn't 100% sure of what was going on. We get a flashback to a young Keith and Royd. Immediately after, it looks like I think the Dimension Eater went off like 7 years ago. They're both very young and they appear to be under the in front of the White Knight's plane that's crashed. Was I seeing that scene right? Did everyone else?
Yeah, that looked like it was in front of the plane that's crashed.
Yeah. And yeah, so I didn't really pick up much on what it was they'd done to be involved there. Was that just unexplained? Did anyone else pick anything else up?
I don't remember.
Someone said something about the trainees, like Royd and Keith, were like still in the academy or in student training at the time, and they had to be involved, like they had no choice but to involve them in the war. That's what I remember.
Okay. Well, normally we do a second watch, but... Yeah, so that was... There's obviously some backstory there. So that happens. We then...
real quick, Gwen, I'm wondering... Well, that's not one of the manga you're reading, right? Because isn't there a manga that gets into, like, the young... They're like, the Windermerians, they're, like, past and stuff like that?
There is, although the only manga I'm actively following at this point is Macross E. Not not the white. I'll be picking up the Aerial Knights manga once they get the Tankobon out.
Right.
Because buying 4 phone books monthly, it's... Yeah.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I just thought, I was wondering if maybe that's something that maybe the manga readers already knew or they alluded to, and they're just kind of throwing that in there for the anime watchers that aren't reading that manga or something.
I was wondering the same thing, actually, because almost from start to finish, except for a couple of scenes, this whole episode was just Windermere people, the Aerial Knights.
Right. It was mostly Windermere, yeah.
Yeah, so I was wondering how it was going to fit into that that manga.
Right.
That just features
them. Right. So we get to the beginning of Heinz's coronation, and interestingly enough, you hear some of the guests or the audience rumor mongering among themselves, and it's mentioned that Keith, according to rumor, became an aerial knight to protect Heinz. Which really goes against how he treats him, how cold he is against him, towards him. So, again, there's got to be more to that.
That's been covered a bit in the Windermere and manga. I've seen people talking about it, and I haven't actually read it myself. But something to do with Heinz's mum, I think. Keith made a promise to her to protect Heinz. Something like that.
That could make sense. I guess.
Yeah. I think it was a previous episode where I think the cannons were shot at the big protoculture ship.
Mm.
And then Keith's reaction was to call Heinz's name.
Mm.
And that's probably a callback to that. He is very protective of Heinz, but for some reason he's treating him very, very coldly right now.
In this particular episode, notably, the Heinz does not return the same coldness back towards Keith. If anything, it's more like, he looks up. He sort of looks up to Keith, doesn't he?
Yeah, he always has. Although in the manga as well, they've shown that. Even because I only read the first chapter of that, but they always showed in the manga that he was waiting for Keith to come back. And they actually showed that in this episode as well. He stops to talk to Keith on his way up the steps in the coronation and says, he always used to watch him how he flew. But we quickly jump back over to the Elysian fleet, where the Waokure crew has all moved into the Ragunyanyan. So does this mean the Ragunyanyan is now a co-ed dormitory? Are we in for co-ed hijinks? Is this Mason Ikkoku now going forward?
I like how a Razor reaction was, hands off my area, this is my space.
Yeah. she had it marked out with her plushies, as you should,
And Kululu was swimming in the bath or something like that.
Well, that's a great point, Mike. Kululu was swimming in Chuck's bed. That is a Ragnan bed, apparently. So Ragnans have water beds. There you go.
Makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Yeah.
Messer was missing out with Marianne there.
Yeah. How would that have worked?
I don't know.
You have to stroke the gill in a certain way, Mike.
Well, he's a jellyfish now, so now he can just swim around.
She can just keep him like a pet.
Yeah.
And on the fleet, Mikumo is kind of having her best flashbacks to Macross 2 again. It really seems like she may have been, I don't know, do we think Windermerian?
Seems like she has a connection, but is the person in the dream her, or is the person in the dream someone else she knows? We don't know.
I think it is her. But I don't know.
It looks like her, but...
And if it is her, where's her rune? If she is Windermerian, so, I mean...
Right, that's a good point, Mike.
Well, I don't think she's Windermerian, though.
But she's connected to the singing in those ruins somehow.
Somehow, yeah.
Right. And so Windermere is forcefully jacking the galaxy network, Renato, remember that?
What do you mean?
Well, they're jacking the galaxy network to broadcast Heinz's coronation throughout the sector on all channels.
Oh, I thought you meant, do I remember that?
Galaxy network is in Macro 7?
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
I thought it was the Scramble News Network.
What show
that's
was...
That's the future. That's
oh,
the...
that doesn't exist yet.
There you go.
It's gonna...
So they're forcefully broadcasting this throughout the sector. And Roy gives a big speech to start off the ceremony. And
really good Dharma Zabi impression.
I was going to say that. That is an excellent call. Like, he had one hand up at one point. And he shows some footage of, and I don't know if you guys had this reaction, he puts up this old footage of a lone Valkyrie flying across the sky, and I was immediately like, oh, that's a VF-22. Wait, it can't be a VF. Yeah, it's a VF-22. And it was a VF-22, and it was dropping the Dimension Eater that went off 7 years ago. Dun, dun, dun.
Were you like, wait, are the Windermeres right? Of this? No, this, you know, the two sides of the story. The new UN says the Windermeres did it to themselves. The Windermeres said the new UN did it. Now we've got this footage that seems to indicate the Windermeres side of the story is right all along, if it's true.
But who was piloting it? Was it Max or Miria?
Oh, Gamlin was. It was Gamlin. Oh my gosh.
Seven literally did it, Renato. They set us up the ball.
Blame it on Seven. People have been doing that for years now.
I'm still in the camp. I think it's like propaganda. I think it's a Windermerian that's piloting that jet, and just so they could do whatever it is they want to do. Establish the what are we calling it? They call it the Starwind cluster in the subs, but it's the domain of the wind or whatever.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I'm not sure if you've seen it before, have you heard about the East Asian co-prosperity sphere that the Japanese people were using during World War II to describe how their domain across that part of the world, what they called it? It's the name they're using in Japan, Japanese for Macross Delta. It seems to harken back to that. Huh. And as we can see from this speech, is showing what their plans are for the rest of the galaxy.
Right, which,
So it's very interesting that this is happening on the day of the election here in Japan.
Oh.
Because they're trying to change the constitution, make it a bit more military-like. So... yeah, maybe it might have been... like, it's a shame that it's on so late. Like, it's a shame that this isn't a Sunday morning cartoon that people could just watch and then, you know, maybe vote a bit more responsibly since people...
you have a side to this, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. That term, though, that they've translated, that the subs have translated as that Starwind sector or something, if you look it up, it comes from a term that's used to, like, refer to getting air superiority.
Yes.
So, like, if you try and translate it using similar terms, then it's about getting fault superiority. So, I'm not entirely sure what it's meant to be, whether it's actually meant to be they are trying to get control of the sector, and that's what the name for the sector is, or whether it is really literally just referring to this fault superiority concept.
And it's... now we know it's not just the sector that they're after.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
It's right.
Like, he's got bigger fish to fry.
Right. Well, they show this footage, and well, tell us, Egan, what does Roy declare next?
Basically, we're taking on the rest of the galaxy, not just the current cluster. But he talks about having the plan. No, first of all, he lays it out on the new UN. You know, by showing this footage, saying it was the new UN who had done what happened 7 years ago, and says, now we got to show that we're the rightful heirs to protoculture and take over the entire galaxy, including the center of the galactic core, Earth, and the rest of the places we've known up to date.
Yeah, so they've gone and upped the stakes, which I find interesting because my first thought is, wait, is there a third season of this show that we don't know about? It certainly has the potential with that, you know, kind of scope to it. But we're here at episode 15, and yes, they'd achieved their first step in taking over that sector. And I think at least I presumed, now the story would be the Elysium and everyone trying to push back. But it's potentially turning into full-scale war at this point.
Galactic? Interstellar? Like, not even since Macross 7 have we seen something this big. Like, yeah, we haven't seen something that would basically affect the entire galaxy as a whole.
Only in the last couple of episodes of Frontier, where they did that whole fault network thing, the Vajra, you could control the Vajra all over the place, I think.
Right.
I don't remember. But anyway, what I found interesting about this speech is that if you look at the Aerial Knights, half of them are like, let's go, yeah. So they're really, really excited for this new war that's coming over. And the older guys, so... What? Herman? And the other dude?
Yeah. His name? Kasim?
Kasim?
Yeah.
Sounds like the guy from the opening of Aladdin.
I was going to say.
Ghazib, that's Ghazib. Anyway, they were like, what the hell is he saying? Is he crazy?
That's right, they were shocked.
So they're actually against that. And if you look at the public are also like, wait, the war's going to go on? I thought the war was ending.
Yeah, all of them were shocked. This is the first they've heard of this. That's right.
Right. Oh. No so, deliberation.
Yeah, it's like you've got this galactic-scale war where the populace of the planet aren't necessarily in favor of it and didn't even know what's going on. I was thinking, wow, you better start feeding more apples to your own populace because you might need it at this rate.
They will.
Yeah, keep them barred out. So, Roy declares war. Hines ascends to the throne, and sings the Song of the Wind, which is strong enough to reveal similar protoculture ruins on every planet that already has protoculture ruins. Reveals that extra device like they have on Ragnar where the Sigur Valens can dock.
This sounds like a different song to me, though.
He's the singer of the wind, so I guess it could be a different song, right?
There was one thing they made a note of in the episode, that because of this live footage that the Delta flight was seeing, does it seem like they were saying this is the first time they made the connection of who is the singer of the wind. They hadn't seen his face until now, right?
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I thought they knew already.
And then it occurred to me, like, yeah, until this point in the series, they had not seen who this singer of the wind. They've heard him, but
Freya must have known.
Freya and Mikumol said, it was the voice of a young boy. Mm-hmm. But that was like 6-7 episodes ago.
It's also the first time, they said it somewhere in the episode, it's also the first time in, was it 110, 150 years or something?
150 years. Yeah.
The wind singer is the king, like has become the king.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to wonder how that's an important plot point. Like, they make a big deal out of it, so it sounds like there's something there.
And there's also one thing that kept going through my mind throughout this coronation is that he doesn't have that much longer to live. When's the next coronation?
Yeah, I was going to bring this up later, Egan, but that seems to be Roy's endgame, doesn't it? Use Hines now until he burns out, take over as much as possible, and then Roy will probably ascend the throne. Would Roy have priority over Keith? Keith being a bastard son? I don't know, but...
Interesting. Intrigue in the palace.
I thought Roy was the bastard son. That's why he... Because remember, Keith had the same... Keith's last name is Windermere, but Roy's last name is Brem, so he doesn't have, like... I think they had different mothers or something. I always forget which one is which.
Now, I'm pretty sure Keith was the bastard son.
Where was any of this explained?
On the website.
God damn it. So basically, you've got to read manga, you've got to read the website, you've got to read all this other stuff to understand this weekly TV show.
Renato, we call it the media mix.
In front of me, on my desk, I have the rubber band thing, wristband, that we got at the Macross Crossover Live 30. You know what it says? No live, no Macross. You know what it should say? No live Macross.
Goes without saying.
Hey, is it all out now, Renato? Are you good?
Please continue. Proceed.
Chef, by the way, while I mentioned the Sega Valens, did you guys notice how when you see it coming down onto the screen head on, the front of it kind of looks like a skull face? Like, it looks like it's got two eyes and a mouth.
No.
It looks really evil. I was getting Mazinga flashbacks.
No, but that might have been... Oh, because of Pilder on. No, but it might have been... it might not have been intentional, because if you remember the design for the Meltrandi battleship thing that is only in the Macross, Do You Remember Love? PS1 game, that's kind of made out of alien faces as well. And that's designed by Miyatake too. So he likes to put in those kind of weird things.
Hmm.
Anyway, to understand this show, you've got to also play a PS1 game from 20 years ago. So.
And that is the way things should be. So, Hines is on the throne, and while this is happening, in the middle of this coronation, in the middle of Mikamor having Macross 2 flashbacks, a nun's fleet approaches Windermere. Why are they approaching? We don't really know. Nuns kind of made a retreat to the shadows when Ragnar was lost, and they're watching from their spy video cameras what's going on. But this fleet, a pretty good-sized fleet too, approaches Windermere, and they have, what is it, fold jammers, right? These new fold jamming systems, which is to block the influence of the Song of the Wind, which would work, except they're completely huge, bloody obvious things strapped to the back of their ships. And Keith just flies in and says, hey, I've only got one eye now, but I can do this, and pretty much takes out all the jamming devices, which lets the Var get into the fleet, and that's that. It's a pretty big fleet scene, you know, the battle begins huge, you're like, well, this is going to be a really big battle, people are going to go and blow stuff up, and it's only really Keith blowing stuff up, that's it.
Yeah, and I think the other aerial knights were commenting that he, like, because he lost his eye, now his rune is stronger or something, so he can ride the wind even better.
Right, they mention his flying something style, like that. Right?
Yeah.
They mention his flying style had changed, but to me it looked like he was flying like Messer, because he was doing the missile dodging. And...
Yeah, I noticed that too. I thought of Messer when he closed his eyes and then sped up straight into the cluster of missiles and then opened them, and then it was almost like shot by shot from the first episode, right?
Yeah, it was.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
So could it be he's kind of, because he has respect for Messer, even though it's Hayata who took out his eye? Because remember, he shook, was it Berg up when he kind of insulted Messer after after he'd taken him out?
It's like he learned from his opponent or something.
Yeah. Something
which is really interesting, because it's kind of like Messer lives through his enemy. I don't know.
It's kind of cool.
It's very existential there.
So that's about it. The fleet gets completely wiped out, which is a shame, because it was a good-looking fleet.
Because people died, Gwyn.
It was a good-looking fleet. It was a pretty fleet. I liked it.
Also, there was a surprisingly graphic death for one of the 171 pilots. I was surprised.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he got, like, beheaded. Hey, I wonder if they're going to cut that out on Blu-ray.
Shh, don't let certain staff members hear you say that. So Delta appears on the scene later. I'm not really sure why they're dispatched and how this works. If anyone else picked that up, feel free to go into the details. But they go in and recover a survivor.
I just think they were too late.
Yeah, or I thought that they didn't realize that. I thought that the Nuns fleet was out there, but it's like I didn't think that they realized that the aerial knights were going to launch attack like they did. So to me, it seems like they were just like, oh, we've got to scramble. It's like last minute. And then by the time they got there, it was too late.
Well, I didn't realize they were going to launch an attack like they did, because if you notice in that scene, the song is still going on.
Yeah.
Hines starts singing, and people are standing up and putting their fists near their hearts and, you know, pledging allegiance. And they're all lining up. And then the next thing you know, they're in space, and Hines is still singing. So how quickly did it take for them to just, you know, get their suits ready and get their drakens ready?
So volume 2 of the soundtrack will be that one song, is what you're telling me.
The greatest hits of Heinz, yes.
Great, Heinz's greatest hits. I like it even.
Heinz's 47 player.
What? Okay. So they pick up a survivor from the wreckage. How do I say that word again, Renato?
Wreckage!
Thank you. And
anytime, boy, anytime.
And then we
wreckage.
Have a...
Wreckage, Gwen, wreckage.
We have a fight.
No, it's with an I, wreckage.
I'm just ignoring all this.
you asked for it.
We get a final shot before the credits of Royd on the steps of the... where is it? The arena, or that's wherever they had the ceremony. Talking to that guy. What's his name again? No one knows.
Burger.
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 That's the one. Okay. and he mentioned something about what was it? The UN space he had pitched proposed a peace treaty, and of course it was getting turned down.
Yeah. He wanted negotiations.
Right.
Yeah.
And it ends there, and we go to the credits. With that.
Well, it ends with them saying they don't deserve to be the what is it like
the inheritors of the protoculture?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we go to credits, and then the stinger after the credits is possibly the most interesting thing in the whole episode.
The stinger after the credits, I believe, contains the only line that Hayato says in the entire episode.
Actually, I think
does
you're
right. Does he speak during the episode? Or is he the one that says, oh, wait, there's a survivor in the UN Spacey fleet?
Yeah, he only has maybe like two or three lines. It's not that many.
Wow, he's going all alto. Because everyone forgot him, just like everyone forgets alto.
Yeah, they forgot to put him in FD7.
Yeah, exactly. I can hear the pain in your voice there, Renato.
There's no pain.
So it turns out that... we find out in this stinger that the rescued pilot knew Arad and knew Hayate's father, whose name appears to have been, and it's not in the credits because he had no voice, and so from what I could hear, is it Wright Immelman? So are we getting double that aviation sounds... references?
Yeah.
Wright Immelman? I'm like, the Wright brothers?
Or it could be named after the Death Note character, Light. Who knows?
Yeah, it could be Light.
It could be, yeah.
I'm kidding. I really don't think that's the case.
Hey, we got Royd instead of Lloyd. We can get Light instead of Wright. It's quite possible. And then he said something to Arad to the extent of, you know, why do you have the son of that man on board? And,
yeah, so obviously he doesn't have a very good reputation.
Right. You know, why? Was he sending... snowmen and bits of sand to more people than just Hayate? Like, what was he? Did he get in trouble for stealing that fold quartz that he sent? What we don't know, but it seems to put to rest all the rumors that Hayate's father is anyone that's previously been in the Macross universe.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. It's not Basara, it's not Usamu, it's not Max or whoever it is you want it to be.
Yeah, no, it was both kind of a shame in that respect, and then also like, oh, wait, finally we're going to get some mysteries resolved. Oh, it's the end.
Now we've got more questions, yeah.
Again, more questions than answers. But, Carissa, I want to jump to you for a sec. Overall impressions. Like, what do you think?
Information overload.
Information like, overload? Information high. It's an information high.
Yeah, maybe that's a better way of being. But there's a lot, I think, also, like, going back to Royd's speech a bit, it's just, like, he just laid out exactly what they've been telling, I guess, the Windermerian people.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of, like, the dimension. I think he said something along the lines of, we've been, like, trying to get the truth from the new UN government, and, like, but all our attempts to get it have been crushed, and so, basically, we've had to launch this war to take back our sky, and then... Mm. That's what they've been telling them, and then, as you said, now Lloyd's just decided, seems he's decided unilaterally to expand that war.
Yeah, unilateral is the correct word, I think.
That seems to have been his decision. So it's like, it feels like it's confirming what a lot of people have said about Lloyd's own aspirations. So it's like things I've read elsewhere, perhaps, but that is also confirmed that most of the Windermere people do really believe that NUN was responsible for what's happened to their country, to their planet, I should say.
It was interesting that Arad and Johnson had this reaction to seeing the footage of that plane dropping the bomb. They were both like gritting their teeth. It's like, oh crap, it's out there. And we know that they were both involved 7 years ago. So did one of them drop it?
Do you think they were gritting their teeth because they don't believe, no, they don't believe that, you know, what the footage is, or they know the footage is true? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
So, or they might have been fed something, and now they're like, wait, that's not how we know what we were told. Even though, like you said, they were actually there.
Well, I guess if we saw a young Royden Hines near a downed fighter, even though it wasn't the VF-22, who's to say they or someone else wasn't in the VF-22?
Or if it was doctored footage to begin with, yeah.
Or what if it was Dr. Chiba?
Oh.
Ooh.
Blame it on Seven again. Whoa.
Anyways, any other thoughts?
No, not...
Nothing major?
Nothing major, really, at this point. It's interesting where they're going. And I guess I was also thinking when they introduced like that aspect about Hayate's father at the end, like the question of introducing him now, he's got a bad reputation. Don't tell me he is linked to that incident as well. That was like the first thought in my mind. And I mean, there's no evidence for it at the moment. It's like, why introduce it now?
Yeah, it sounds like it has to be relevant to the plot. But, I mean, how is it that no one else on the entire Elysian knows of this reputation of this man? If they're all in the military.
Presumably Arad does then, though, right?
Yeah, Arad does. And it's like, Arad, the Keeper of Secrets, you know, he knew about Messer's condition. He knows about Hayate's father. He probably knows who the hell Mikomo is, you know.
He definitely knows who Lady M is.
Exactly. Look, if Arad dies, we're all screwed. No one's going to find out anything.
Oh, we have to end the story. We have to end the series. We don't know how it ends. Sorry.
But Arad did make a reference to I assumed was Hayate's dad, like in an earlier episode. He was like,
yeah.
What was it?
He's like,
like, he really flies like the guy or something. Like,
he reminds me of him.
So it seemed almost like praise.
Right.
And then now you get this, which is like, actually, like,
He's got a bad reputation.
Yeah. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I still think there's a connection that we know from Freya's past. There's someone from off-world that gave her that music play. I still think there's a connection there, but I'm not sure when we're going to find out about it.
I thought this episode, given we were coming from last episode with them dealing with shortages on the island-class ship, I was actually thinking they would still be gearing up or finding their footing to go... we had the kind of cool-down episode, and now we've gone straight into another build-up episode. And I'm just looking at the scene with Herman where he has no neck. I don't know what's happening in that scene. But it's kind of interesting and odd pacing. Yeah, it was a lot of information. Just jumping back briefly to the opening, I've got to say I was a little bit disappointed that there was pretty much no new animation. They were just... Well, they did this in Frontier as well, but they were just reusing screen caps with some funky editing.
Well, they do that for most of Satellite's shows. Aquarian was like that too.
Right. Yeah.
Just that with Aquarian, the funkier song tends to be the one for the second season, whereas... In this case, it's the more, as you say, loungy, more laid-back kind of...
Would you say the ending has a similar vibe to it as well, the new ending?
Similar to what?
Oh, like you said, it's kind of laid-back, more chill, like I think someone's called it.
No, I think the ending is a lot more upbeat than the opening.
I like the ending. The ending song is growing on me, but yeah.
But the new opening, even in the commercials for this song, they had the first trailer for the single that comes out. Now that the first album's out, the next single is August 10th.
It played right after the opening, right?
Yes.
Right.
From that commercial and on the website, we now know the second single is coming. Well, we knew August 10th is when it's coming out. It's going to have both the opening and the ending in it.
That it looks like the film clip has like a production line of Valkyrie members. Like they've just photoshopped girls upon girls upon girls. It just seemed really weird but interesting. Certainly more budget to it just from that clip than they had in the previous film clip where they were all on fire and stuff.
All right, so after the broadcast, Twitter has exploded, as it usually does once a new thing is announced during the broadcast. So AD, there's this guy or this group, this duo, I think, musicians called AD, and they have written and composed the opening song of Delta.
AD, is that just spelled A-D?
No, it's E-I-D-Y, pronounced A-D.
Okay, okay.
So if you go to their homepage, it looks like they're just a duet kind of band.
Okay.
But it's weird. They don't actually sing the opening song.
They composed it.
They composed it.
Okay.
So that's that. Yes.
So, all right, episode impressions. Speaking of that, Renato, what did you think?
I thought it was okay. Honestly, I haven't really been feeling on these last few episodes.
It seems to have lost that rhythm it had going, doesn't it?
Yeah, it had a rhythm where you'd have a little bit of exposition and a bit of plot being driven in the first half, and then the second half would be either cool dancing or cool musical numbers and stuff, and this is not that anymore. So it's lost a bit of the fun factor. But you know what? I think the original Macross TV show was like that as well. Towards the second half, it became like really, really gloomy. Once they started picking off characters, like Roy's dead, hey, Kakizaki's dead, okay, we're just going to mope around in space now.
So by that logic, everybody should like it now, right?
Yes, it's Macross, finally.
Yeah. Really, this is my Macross.
This is my Macross.
Okay. So, Mike, any thoughts?
Hashtag, yes, my Macross.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Renato. Were you... That's were okay. You had you finished your thoughts?
Making stupid jokes, yeah. Please continue.
Okay, so... like, yeah, you guys had kind of touched on it. You know, we get this in all, you know, longer-running anime series where there's peaks and valleys, right? So, like... and I think we've definitely hit a lull. But as far as my thoughts on this episode, I think... there's really only one thing I can say, and that is...
boring! Boring!
Did you guys get that?
No, not at all.
Yeah, please play it a billion times more. Yeah,
yeah, I was just like, okay. To me, the most interesting thing that happened was that reveal at the end of, you know, Hayata's parentage as far as, you know, oh... You're so-and-so's son. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But, like, everything else, we kind of knew it was coming, and it's just basically a bunch of backstory over a bunch of asshole characters that I really don't care about.
But isn't that kind of strange? Because when I was watching it, I was thinking, this should be interesting, because we've never had a Macross series that had such deep... oh, sorry. That had enemy characters, right? And so I'm like, I should be caring about this, but...
yeah.
But you're not.
They're such assholes.
Exactly. Exactly. No, it's a good point, Renato. Yeah, I was like, hey, you know what? We've never... I was like, this should be interesting. This should be... I'm like, oh, cool. We're getting, like, stuff about... from the other side, which is kind of cool. But, like, I was actually looking forward to it because that's what I was expecting. And it was just a bunch of pomp and circumstance and, like, I don't know. I was like, ah, whatever. Let's... I'm like, where's some Valks? Where's Machina? Where's, you know, something? But we got this crappy wind song. And seriously, like, we got, it's the full version of his song. I'm like, okay, it's a full version of this song that makes me want to go to sleep. And then the episode's over. So, whatever.
You're VAR resistant. Okay,
yeah.
Good to hear.
Thank you. Yeah, you can't win them all. So that's pretty much.
That's good. Now we know you're the one who will take the battle to them when we need it.
That's right,
Egan.
Yeah, my impressions.
Yeah,
yeah. Because they posted up the episode summary beforehand, I kind of expected it. I was going off like just like Renato said, is this the first time we've had in any Macross series that almost an entire episode was devoted to the enemy? to see their side of the story. Have we ever seen that in any previous Macross series before?
Not that I know of. Yeah, even Seven didn't do it.
Exactly.
And Seven had the whole love triangle, if you remember, with Civil and Gigolo.
I mean, even going back to the first series, like, there were a few, like, Zentradi-heavy episodes, but it still was always interspersed with, you know, Hikaru and everybody else. So, I mean, there was, like, what, two cutaways to the Delta flight, and that's it.
And it's just them watching what was going on in the Windermere. So it's like, oh, yeah, we're in this series too, right? Okay.
But, they're watching the same show we are.
The other thing...
go ahead, Egan.
Yeah. The other thing was also the whole Gamrazabi impression and the whole speech, and then, like you were saying, raising the stakes. Now we're going galactic with this. Okay. Now we're going somewhere with this. Other than that, the other thing that kept coming to my mind is now we see why Mikimo, when the very beginning, when we first heard about what happened 7 years ago, what was going on with the dimension weaponry. It's like from the beginning, she was saying there's more than one side of the story, depending on your perspective, your frame of reference. Now we're getting a sense of what was going on, and we still don't know which is right. Although we now see why the Windermereans feel they've been justified in their war all along.
Can I say something completely non-related to that, Egan?
Sure.
I'm just looking at the pause of the Wow Pure second single commercial where they have the Photoshop picture of the production line, pretty much, of Wow Pure members. There's at least 20 Jinnas in this picture, and not one of them is smiling. And now that I mention it, not one of the Valkyrie members is smiling. It's infectious. Not even Minori. Like, I think Junei is the origin of the VAR in this picture. It's spreading out. And
Are you watching the commercial again, Gwen? Or is there like some stills or something that you're looking at?
I'm just watching the commercial again.
I noticed that in the first, the music video for the first single, they made a point of telling, whoever was the director of music, nobody smile, man. Everyone just look at, forlornly at the camera.
Those aren't the only people who are not smiling. Have you seen the jacket? The CD cover?
Illustration? Yeah.
They're all like this is Wakure, right? They're all supposed to be happy, happy, magical girls. Yeah, they look like they're about to kill you right now.
Well,
Freya. It's
standing there in a line, and even Mikumo is like, I'm gonna shove this mic so far up.
There are worse ways to die, I guess, Renato. What can I say? Egan, were there any other thoughts? Sorry for cutting you off there.
Oh no, that pretty much covers it. Like we've got the speech. And like you said, now we have even more questions of what happened and about in the past.
And right.
We still don't know for certain what's happening with Hiatus Pass, with the past of the Windermereans, much less of all these other characters that we have yet to see on screen, like Lady M.
Yeah, I'm hoping this, at least next episode now, one would hope, find out about Hiatus. Father, that's one.
Yes.
One thing down, about a dozen or so to go.
Will they ever actually tell us who Lady M is?
What if they didn't? What if they never tell us who Lady M is?
It really is. Lady M is Flower Girl. Oh my gosh. We'll never know.
The most interesting theory I heard, and I must point out that this was a theory I heard by a semi tipsy fan dressed as Kururu, okay? yesterday during lunch. And her opinion was that Lady M is Mina from Macross 30, because 7 years ago was when Macross 30 occurred.
Yes, that's right.
So she is convinced that it's all tied into Macross 30. That's why... Exactly.
And the whole thing about dimensional faults first really played a big factor in Macross 30.
Where the planet was surrounded by a fold aurora. So, yeah, it was a very interesting theory, but I don't believe it for a second. I wish it was true, though.
Yeah, they'd have to like upgrade the Macross 30 game to PS4 so that everyone can actually play it and find out what people are talking about.
Or just make a sequel.
Macross 32.
Yes. Macross 32.
That'd be 30.
The Mega 32. Yay.
34 now, wouldn't it? But if you want to go by Macross name.
Oh, I'm just going Final Fantasy by Final Fantasy sequel naming. It's like, that doesn't even make any sense.
It'd be 30-2.
Terrible.
Right?
I thought you meant terrible Sega consoles. 32X.
You mean awesome Sega consoles, right?
Oh, of course. Sorry. I'm
telling you, Lady M, Bobby Margo, man.
Lady Mega Drive. There you go. Done.
No, I know who Lady M is.
Okay.
It's Mui Mui. He is going to tell us the story of who Lady M is and reveal it at his next stage show.
I hope he does. And for anyone who doesn't get that reference, listen to the last non-Gurtalk episode of the Speaker Podcast. So, on that note, does anyone have any final comments before we wrap this up for the evening?
Not only that, I'm looking at the image, one of the promotional images for what you just mentioned, Gwyn, about the the dozens of Junas and the dozens of Minoris that are not smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It looks like a cult. It actually looks damn frightening.
Okay. Not really related to this at all, but did you guys notice that in the new opening... the word Valkyrie comes up, the Valkyrie symbol, and the
comes
logo
up before the
comes
title.
Up before the title of the show.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, this is the show now.
It's like...
I'm going to watch the latest episode of Valkyrie.
Exactly. I can imagine people saying that, you know.
I would watch that.
You get that
really
in the episode,
that.
Which is mostly about Windermere.
Exactly, I was just going
to... Wow, this is we're being messed with Kawamori again, aren't we?
Just have the Winter Boys be in the opening and the ending.
Well, the opening also seemed to show characters in some different kind of... They framed them differently.
The Pogue animation is in the opening.
It is.
They really love that sequence, don't they?
So now it gets to be reused at least once an episode.
Once an episode, yeah.
All right.
We're not sick of it at all, no.
Alright, so look, I think the topic of Bogue's reused face is the best place to wrap things up tonight. Renato.
Reused face.
Renato,
yes.
you are back in Japan, correct? No?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Welcome back. Where can people find you?
In Japan.
Okay.
Wah, wah, wah.
Anywhere else? I believe you made that, you're on Twitter. You're really loving it, from what I heard.
Oh my god, it's a real blast, man. Yeah. Like all the... that's funny. Oh my god, the GUI is terrible. It's absolutely terrible. I can't follow conversations at all. And don't even get me started on the... You gotta speak in 100 characters or whatever.
We're going political. Take cover.
Anyway, at Renatology.
Okay.
If you want to follow me, at Renatology. That's where it is. Renatology.
Okay. And Egan can be found...
Telling people that the next episode is called Birthday. Mike was noted that it could be translated as hesitant birthday or reluctant birthday. Really? Probably a more smoother way of translating it. So that's what I'm here for.
So this will be the episode where Makina and Reina have a date, and Makina has to throw Reina her medal through the window for a birthday present. Right? This is going to be.
As long as Makina pops up out of a cake, I'm fine. It can be whatever.
All right. And so, Mike, when you're not jumping out of cakes yourself, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Mike in Redlands. And, I'll be railing against this episode pretty much all week.
Ooh, that's harsh. That is harsh. All right, Carice, where can people find you?
Boring!
Oh, my God.
Okay, at Whitebox Gems, that's the Tumblr blog, or you can find me on Twitter as well, at Curry67.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to follow you now then.
And as usual, you can find me at Gwyn Campbell, capital G, capital C, one word, on Twitter, or you can always email the cast. at speakerpod@gmail.com. All right. So, with that image stuck in my head of dozens of World Courier members not smiling, probably because they've been watching Bogue's reused animation over and over again.
They're not even just not smiling. Juno looks sedated. It's terrible. This is awful. The more I look at it, the more I think, my God, these poor women. Look at it, man.
Renato, ending the podcast on a positive note, as always.
Well,
he's only watching out for them.
Yeah. All right.
I missed you on the cast, buddy.
Thanks.
Nice to have you back.
All right. So until Renato joins us again next week, this is Speaker Podcast, the latest episode of Girl Talk, folding out.